Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and you know what? We have a really amazing guest today. I'm so excited that we landed to score an interview with her. It is Shannon Payne, and Shannon is the Executive Director of Human Resources at Online Education Services. She's been there since 2012. She was part of the startup team, and this place has exploded. And we're going to hear a little bit about the story there. So since she arrived, she has guided the creation and implementation of all people-related initiatives across the business, including recruitment, remuneration, leadership development, organizational culture, and engagement. And all of this through rapid expansion and growth. So this is not just a steady state business. This has been, boom, big stuff happening. And the efforts have not gone unnoticed. The OES has achieved and maintained the Aon Hewitt Best Employer Accreditation in 2014, 2015, and 2016. And then the Big Kahuna Award in 2017, they were named the best of the best. So cool. So Shannon, welcome. And I'd love to hear, first of all, about the startup journey, especially in the higher education space, which I know, because I work with a bunch of different universities, has been quite challenging. So tell us, where did you start and how did people-related initiatives feature in part of the startup plan?
Awesome. Thanks for that great introduction. Working in a startup has been quite a ride. I think starting up in our journey, it was really interesting because it was a joint venture between SEEK and Swinburne University, a 50-50 joint venture. So in effect, we were taking two quite different cultures and smashing them together, and we had to very quickly work out what we wanted to be. So before we even hired the CEO, myself and the steering committee actually took the time to identify what type of culture we wanted to have, because obviously then hiring the CEO, having someone to lead that culture, was going to be key. So we established very quickly, and we were very clear that we wanted to be a people-first focused business, that we wanted to be a culture of trust. We went out and landed ourselves a brilliant CEO who encompassed all of those things and who genuinely believed in, by looking after your people, you therefore created an awesome business. And that was Denise Pitt, who is still with us today. Once we actually were on the ground and from day one, we knew that we had to send some pretty big statements to back up that vision of having a people-first business. And we did a couple of things. First of all, because we knew we wanted to be a trust-based business, we thought, okay, what's a really good way to establish that and show that we're serious about that? And we did two things. One was we put in place a discretionary sick leave policy. We wanted to be able to care for and look after people if they ever were unwell, but we also wanted to show that we trusted in our people. We still have that today, 6.5 years on.
So, Shannon, what does that actually mean? So discretionary sick leave. So you take as much as you want whenever you want, and you don't have to put in a medical form, or what does it look like?
You take it on an as-needs basis. It's discretionary rather than unlimited because, if someone decides they want to take off every Monday because they've got a bit of a hangover, obviously that's not on. We would then reserve the right to put someone back to the statutory minimum. But otherwise, if someone needs it, they can take it. So we've had a couple of employees who've had some unfortunate circumstances where they've had to take 3 months off. And that's been fine. And it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to be able to support them through those times. Our average number of sick days per employee is actually sitting around 3.5 days at the moment. So whilst it's discretionary, it just shows having that highly engaged, strong culture. It certainly hasn't resulted in high sick leave. In fact, it's way below the average, 3.5 days a year. The other thing we did was we decided to not put in a probation period. Same thing, we didn't want to put people through our pretty rigorous recruitment process to then start with us and go, oh, hey, well done, you've gone through our interview process, but now you're on probation. So we don't have a probation period. Again, we trust in our recruitment process and we trust in the people that we hire. They'll come in and do a great job. So that we just wanted to send some strong statements early on, and so they're the two main things that we put in place. And then I think, you know, it's something that myself and the CEO and the rest of the executive team drove from day one, and that is around when we make decisions, we make them with the in the mind of we care and trust the people that work for us. So whenever we've had to make a business decision, we come at it from that angle first. What is the fair thing to do? You know, what's the best thing to do to treat this person as a person? And no, we call it a whole person approach. So we remember that people have families outside of work. They have other interests, other hobbies. And a happy employee is going to be one that can go home and do all those fun things outside of work.
Awesome. So I love that you started a company with the whole premise of what kind of culture do we want to build? So there's a lot of companies that don't even think about that. It's more like, where can we get customers? How are we going to make money? And to think about that strategically from the beginning is likely one of the contributing factors to the awards that you've gotten. The question is, for those who are unfamiliar with the story of the business, can you just give us a brief snapshot of what is OES? How did it start and where is it now?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned earlier, it was a joint venture between SEEK and Swinburne University. The idea came to being in 2011 to make use of the government uncapping university places and going to a demand-driven system. So this business was really about giving people an opportunity to access higher education who may not have been able to have that opportunity before. So our target audience was and still is working Australians who wanted to have a career pivot, maybe become a teacher, or who wanted to go and get a degree because, you know, circumstances had been they couldn't get that straight out of school. We started off, you know, from the start, we used to talk about when we get 10,000 students and used to have a bit of a laugh to ourselves. We hit that mark last year. So we've gone from a startup and zero students back in July 2011, and now we have 10,000 students, you know, over 500 graduates. So
these are all online students, right, though?
Yep, completely online. So our first partner was Swinburne University. So they were a part owner but also a client. And earlier this year we also launched Western Sydney University. So we design and deliver higher education, tertiary qualifications on behalf of those universities, and we design the online units and we also deliver it through our teaching, and we also offer student support to all of our online students.
So what do you think has been the difference in your success? Like, it's just taken off for offering tertiary education online. Where do you think that demand is actually coming from?
I think people who can't make it to a physical campus because they've got full-time jobs. So the majority of our students are full-time workers who are studying part-time. We also have a large number of more regional students as well who can't make it to a campus to study the degree that they want to study. So it's that flexibility of online that really attracts a lot of our students to us. I think one of the things that's made us really successful was certainly our student-centric approach. So again, from day one, we were very clear that we were all about the student and offering them the support. You know, back when we started, having student advisors who were available 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. Monday to Friday and 10 till 6 on weekends was something really new.
That's huge.
A lot of our competitors are now kind of catching up to that idea. But again, we were around, well, if our students are studying online and they're working full time, they're going to be wanting to access support outside of normal business hours. And so we set that up from day one and certainly feel that that's led to the success of our students and therefore our business.
Awesome. So let's talk about the Best of the Best award. I mean, that's quite an accolade. So what is it about EOS and the stuff that you do that qualifies you as best of the best? Is there a secret sauce or is there a recipe for it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is a basic recipe, but that basic recipe can be hard to execute, otherwise everyone would be doing it. You know, so really it is about saying to get the basics right. So for us, that is around remuneration and making sure that people are paid fairly. We constantly look at the market and make sure that we're keeping up with market rates. And we're also quite transparent with our people too about how their remuneration is set. We certainly don't publish everyone's salaries, but we're quite open with all of our employees about what roles they're benchmarked against and why they're benchmarked against those certain roles. It's been all about leadership. So we do a huge amount of leadership training. My philosophy has always been, you know, the number one reason why people leave a business is because of a bad manager. Number one reason why they stay is because of a good manager. So our leaders are excellent, again, people focused, and they're very well trained. Certainly our values. So we talk about it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. And our values aren't just a plaque hanging on a wall. They're absolutely a fundamental part of every day here at OES, and making sure that we're consistent in that. And then obviously everything starts with the recruitment as well. So recruiting to those values, never compromising on those values of culture fit. And, you know, the tricky part is when the business is under pressure, so when you're growing as fast as we have, there were some days where we really needed certain roles to start as soon as possible. And the temptation starts to creep in of, oh, maybe you should put that person in that role even if they're not the right values fit. We never gave into that temptation. Our team was quite happy to pull together and go to plan B and be patient and wait for that right person to come along. So that's where I think we've what we do that's different to others is that we really stick to that. We don't compromise. We've always listened to our people. So I can have five great ideas before breakfast and think that they're really good. But, you know, I don't come in and implement those. We survey our people twice a year. My HR team are always out on the floor talking to everyone. We've created a great environment of trust. And our people will tell us what it is they want and need to keep them engaged. If you listen to your people and you create that environment where they will come to you and tell you the truth, I think that's definitely been the secret to our success.
So I noticed that nothing in there was mentioning perks, though you did mention briefly that the HR people talk to folks on the ground about what will keep them engaged. Are the things that keep them engaged, is it around perks or is it around opportunity? Is it around growth or is it around what Dan Pink talks about around mastery and autonomy? So what is it that they come back with around the engagement component?
Yeah. Look, I love the Dan Pink stuff. And I send that video around to my managers on a regular basis for a bit of a refresher because I am a big believer that they are the things that keep people motivated and engaged. The perks are nice. The perks are the things that, and we do a lot of them, and they appear on our social media all the time. We had a chocolate fountain down in our break room the other day where people were dipping marshmallows in. But, you know, those perks don't work if you don't have those basics right in the first place. So it is, I think, about creating that sense of purpose, and we have a very strong one in the fact that we are making lives better through access to education, and everyone is aligned to that sense of purpose and student success. It's about you know, creating roles and having that sense of trust where people are trusted to do their job and do it well and have the autonomy to do that. Certainly our high growth environment has meant that there's been a lot of career opportunities here. But we've formalised those. They don't just happen by accident. We've got a great pipeline of talent that comes from our student advisor team into our learning design team at the moment. So there's always opportunities for people here. And the perks just make life fun. I mean, there is. We try and not just do sugar and donuts and chocolate, but you know, we have yoga at lunchtime and you know, massages and all those sorts of things. That certainly is. I see that as the icing on top.
Yeah, right. So, do the people ask for the same things that you think are fundamental to engagement? So that autonomy, opportunity, and sense of purpose, or what do the people actually ask for?
Yeah, they do. The example I can give that kind of surprised me in the early days was when they asked for us, rather than to spend money giving them more perks, was to actually invest it back into the infrastructure to make the student experience better. So, you know, they felt that they would be happier if we were able to implement things that would make the student experience better. And again, that was new for me. It's a very different thing at working in education, and it shows the types of people that we have recruited that are like that and are very altruistic, and that's why they're here. And a good example of having to listen to people, because I never would have picked that in a million years, that's something that they would have done. You know, apart from that, and I was just down just the other day with the student ops team. It's their busy period. They just finished the biggest enrolment period we've ever had as a business. So they were pretty tired. And I went down and said, guys, what do you want? They wanted donuts. So sometimes it is something as simple as donuts. So we got some donuts delivered for them yesterday. But most of the time it's around just being recognised. So, again, having those really good leaders in place who are making sure that their people are thought of, who are cared for, and who are trusted as individuals.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So it really does come back to the values. You know, if you set those values, how you want to organise the culture and how you recruit against that, that sort of filters out through the organization. So it's a lovely testimony that the fact that they want to make student experience better, which is aligned with the purpose and that sense of we're inspiring and nurturing growth. And of course they want that for their students. They're not there to be self-oriented or just self-oriented. So that's wonderful. So the people strategies going from a startup to large scale, how did you manage to scale people strategies? And the other question with that is you invested in leadership development early, and most startups, they kind of park that kind of soft skill, people-oriented stuff while they're getting the business going. How did you manage to incorporate it from the beginning? And then how did you scale stuff? Like, what were some considerations that you needed to keep in mind?
Yep. So again, from the start, we used to, anything that we implemented, we would always implement it and go, right, this is working great from day one, but how will this look when we have 10,000 students? That was always our aspiration. An example with leadership development, you know, in the early days, we didn't have the scale to do that internally. So we often outsourced that, you know, and would send people on courses, et cetera, as well as I would do little videos for our employees to be able to look at. That evolved to we just launched our own leadership development program just a couple of months ago. We had to define what made a great leader at OES. So in the early days, we were able to sit around as a group of 10 managers and talk about that. Now we have 35 managers. You know, we don't see each other as much as we used to, so we had to formalise that. So we got the leadership group together to really try and define and distill not just what makes a great leader, what makes a great leader at OES. And we came up with 9 key leadership competencies that are for us here. And we've developed a 9-month leadership program that incorporates the LSI as well, so incorporates a well-known and used tool. And we've just launched that. So it is about, I think we take stock every year to look back at what's working, how can we scale things. I think as you grow too, it's really important to think, what do you let go of and what do you keep? Because you will change, and change, especially in our environment as we grow, is actually good. And to try and keep hold of everything would actually be unhealthy, because you can't keep hold of everything you were in a startup. It's about identifying those elements of what to keep and what to let go of. So we do that on an annual basis. We call them retros.
Retros. Love it. And how hard is that to let go of stuff? Is it a difficult process, or are people au fait with that now?
Everyone's different. That's the one thing I have learned about change. Some people are au fait and other people find it really hard to let go. Interestingly, in our recruitment process, we psych test everyone that comes on board with us. One of the things we do look for in all of our employees is people who are comfortable with change, because we are just that environment that does change a lot. So I think we're better than most, and most of our people are pretty cool with it. But you always have some people that you know, it holds it dear to them and do have trouble moving on and letting go. They usually get there in the end, and we help them with that. And again, it's just that understanding that everyone processes change a little bit differently.
Yeah, especially if it's their pet project, I can imagine that's a harder thing to let go of.
Yeah. But again, I think it's role modeled by all the executives. And we always talk about, you know, sometimes you don't have to be a Pollyanna and go, yay, change, I'm fine with it. You're allowed to have your moment and say, look, I'm really struggling with this. Again, it's about our open and honest environment that we've created here. But then we do expect you to pick yourself up and move on. So again, that resilience is a really key factor that we look for when recruiting any employee to our business.
So it sounds like you've mastered the online digital connection space well with students. I'm curious how you do that with staff. So culture is generally thought of in traditional terms where everybody is in the same location. Contemporary workplaces, that's not necessarily the case. You have digital employees in satellite locations or working from home and remotely. Mm-hmm. How have you managed to maintain a positive culture even with people in offsite or different sites? How does it work?
Yep. So we have 300 employees that are completely remote and never come into the office at all. Their engagement is actually traditionally a couple of points higher than our office employees.
Wow.
Pretty amazing, we think. The great thing is that we've actually taken what we've learned of how to engage students in an online environment and translated that to how to engage employees in an online environment. There's a couple of key factors. One is creating a sense of community. So we have an online portal which has a chatter room, it has a staff room. We have staff rooms for subject-specific tutors where they can swap stories and swap ways to engage students better. We also have staff rooms where they can talk about their weekend and post photos of their holidays and things like that, because we know that creating that sense of community is really important to engagement. We also run engagement surveys with our remote workforce. So again, we are always looking at what are the drivers of their engagement. It is slightly different to the on-site employees. The two main things that our remote workforce say they love so much is, number one, that sense of purpose and their ability to influence positive student outcomes. But number two, it's the flexibility. So 80% of our remote workforce are female, and a lot of them talk about just being able to balance that with a family is incredibly valuable to them, and as well as having meaningful work, and that's why they're so engaged.
Oh, that's awesome. And who knew that that would be the case in terms of how to keep people engaged, is creating a platform, a digital platform where they can have little chatterboxes, that sense of there's other humans out there that they can talk to. Yeah.
And I think professional development's been a really key thing as well. So just because they don't come into the office doesn't mean they're forgotten. We actually have a role called a teaching coach that is about bringing what's the best online teaching practices out there and bringing them back to our environment and making sure that our workforce is constantly being developed in those kind of new areas and being coached to be even better tutors. So they're very much involved in all of that. The values are also brought to life. So how to behave in the online environment is just as, if not sometimes more important than in the office environment, because obviously everything's written down.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that you can monitor that and bring that to life is an important aspect of that. So I'm thinking now about your leadership development program for leaders who manage remote staff. Do you have particular competencies or focus on that? Or is it a subject that's incorporated? Or is it just expected that you roll out the same competencies, whether it's on-site staff or remote staff?
Yeah, the competencies we feel are going to be exactly the same for our remote staff. It will be rolled out in a different way. So that's a piece of work we're currently working on. It's really interesting for our remote staff because they are tutors and a lot of them are ex-teachers or academics. What's really important to them is to get an actual qualification at the end. So we're in the process now of mapping our leadership development program to a certificate four and diploma of teaching and assessment and leadership. And once we've mapped that, we'll be rolling that out to the remote workforce where they'll be able to opt in and opt out of that, but they'll be able to complete modules when they feel they want to complete them, and then that will eventually roll up to a to a qualification for them.
Yeah, fantastic. So I'd love to hear about your personal story. So fantastic. You've been involved with the startup. What a major achievement to building this education online and making it work. You know, there's lots of stories about MOOCs not working and this kind of being a huge promise and ending badly. And you've pioneered a culture that is thriving. How did you get there? So what is your leadership journey?
Yeah, so I actually started off in retail.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you sell in retail?
Yeah, so I worked for supermarkets. So I was a checkout operator manager and a bakery manager and a deli manager because, you know, that's where I'd worked throughout my kind of school and university years. And when I finished uni, that's just where I ended up and was a really great training ground for becoming a HR professional later on in my career, because just being able to be 22 and managing 75 staff is a pretty good training ground for learning how to deal with all those people issues, how to deal with customer issues. So that was great. And I think I learned really early on that empowering your staff, trusting them was the best way to get the most productivity out of them. That it worked. So I was in retail for quite a long time. Then, you know, obviously didn't want to get pigeonholed into retail, so made the decision to start looking elsewhere. And that's when I ended up at Seek. Seek was a company that I had been interested in working for a very long time because they had a great reputation. They've also been an accredited best employer now for, I think, 10 years. And Seek was... when I started there in 2010, that was my first experience of a business that was truly people first led, had a great sense of purpose, and certainly had best practice HR. And it was just a brilliant training ground to learn all of that. And got the opportunity then when the joint venture started to come over to OES.
Oh, that's what an amazing trajectory. So how'd you go, age of 22, managing 75 staff in a bakery? What were some raw lessons you learned first up, do you think?
Oh, wow. I think that, you know, micromanaging people didn't work. I remember some of my early performance management conversations with people and learning that, you know, because head office had told you to do something, actually doing it in real life didn't always work the way that people in head office were telling you. So I think it taught me at the coalface that everyone's different and that people issues and different personalities need to be approached differently and that you can't control everything, certainly, especially in a retail environment where, yeah, margins are quite low and you're always worrying about wage budgets and costs. It taught me how to manage a budget, and I think that's something that's really important for all HR professionals, is to feel really comfortable with the financials of the business and feel really comfortable with budgeting and numbers. I think that helps you create much stronger business cases later on and have a lot more influence with managers if you're comfortable with all those sorts of things. And the other great thing about retail, you know, it really teaches you about the importance of customer service and teaches you how to work hard. It gives you a great work ethic.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something to be said about having those really tough, challenging jobs in service-based industries. They do teach you, in my experience, about people. I waitressed for 10 years through uni. I learned a lot about people, dynamics, service, and that hard work ethic, that's for sure. And I think that translates well through careers. And I always encourage young people to go ahead and get those jobs because it's more than the money that you get out of it, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. If I think about how I can relate now to our team leaders and managers who are at the coalface, I can relate to them because I've been there, not because of me studying a performance management unit at uni. It is by being there and doing it, which gives you credibility, gives you empathy, and it gives you all those war stories that you can share with your fellow managers.
Yeah, that's right. I remember when.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So on that I remember when and the war stories, what mistakes do you see people making in when it comes to people initiatives?
I think that they do think the bells and whistles and the perks will fix everything. You know, I've certainly been to companies that have free coffees and slides and ball pits but don't have the basics right and wonder why those things aren't working. Number two would be not listening to their people and thinking that what you know, they think they know all the answers and come in and do them and they haven't taken the time to test that. I think definitely not acting on poor leadership and not acting fast enough and holding people accountable for bad behaviour. It's so important that your actions match your words. Employees pick up very quickly that if you're just paying lip service to something, if a company is really strong about their values and talks about how important their values are, yet there's someone on the executive team who's not living those values, that undermines everything that you're trying to achieve. So even having to make those tough calls, I just find a lot of businesses aren't quite prepared to make those when push comes to shove, and that's where they go wrong.
I think you're right. So I've been having conversation with different leaders about this, about getting their teams back on track by having those ground rules, by being explicit about the values and what the agreed behaviors on. And what I've noticed is the stumbling block between, or a gap between saying it out loud, you know, this is what we stand for, this is what we accept, and this is what we don't accept. And really the proof is in the pudding, or the proof mm-hmm. of the pudding is in the tasting, is the expression, is do they actually call each other out on that? And I think that is really the important piece. So when you do your work with new leaders and new teams, how do you get people how do you encourage people to keep each other accountable? What is the encouragement? Do you have particular strategies to teach around that?
We do. We actually teach people how to give feedback because it can be a really scary thing if you're not used to it. And I talk a lot about creating the right environment so people feel comfortable giving that feedback. For me, that actually is pretty simple for a manager, and that is how do you react when you're given the feedback? So if you react in a positive way, thank the person for the feedback, and even though inside you might be churning, to absolutely not show that, if need be, to go away and process it for 24 hours, but creating that environment where that employee will feel comfortable giving you that feedback again. If you react badly, you've, again, just undermined everything all over again. So I think that's one of the most simple things a manager can do to create that good environment. One of the reasons why we actually chose the LSI as a tool for us was that it actually doesn't allow for written comments. It encourages people to then go out and have conversations with the participants of that survey, because we really don't want people to hide behind the survey. We want them to have those conversations. So my HR consultants and my HR business partner do a lot of work at the coalface with employees, coaching them, role-playing, how to give feedback upwards, sideways, downwards. It's just such an important part of who we are, but also recognizing that it's actually not an easy thing to do for a lot of people.
Oh, I totally agree. And in my experience working with teams and leaders, that's what I find is their biggest obstacle to becoming a boundless team, unlimited team, mm-hmm. is their ability to have the tough conversations is the number one hurdle. And there's lots of reasons why people find it difficult. And one of the easiest ways to fix that is to give them the skills and tools and frameworks to do it. So I love that you've nailed that one and really brought that to the fore. Fabulous. So if 10,000 was your goal and you've exceeded that, what do you sit around going, okay, when we get to, do you have a new number? Do you have a new vision for the business, or what's the story there?
Yeah, we've got a really strong executive team and a really strong five-year strategy that we've got in place. Obviously, I can't divulge all of that.
Of course not, yeah.
but, you know, the kind of key things that's public that we're working on now is we have just hired our first employee in the UK. So that's an area where we're looking to expand and hoping to sign a university partner there very soon. That's going to be a completely different dimension for our business, having something in the UK. Also exploring other international opportunities quite actively, and also actively looking for another partner in the Australian market. So we don't have a number in mind. You know, it's kind of limitless for us. but we're ready to, as you put it so eloquently before, go boom all over again now, which is quite exciting.
That's fantastic. So I can tell your enthusiasm, your passion, your energy is laser sharp and infectious. And thank you so much for sharing so generously about the strategies and techniques that you bring to your work, and for modeling what it means to be a people-focused business and showcasing that it really does produce business results, as well as a place that people feel proud to belong to and are happy to be part of. So congratulations on all your great work.
All right. Thanks very much.